This is Tracy.
And this is Sheila. Here's Five Bad Chicks.
And we're coming at you from the Starbucks in the Chapters in the Oshawa Center.
So it's nice and noisy and loud and happy, and there's lots of people. But it's better than a little dog snuffling at the recorder.
Exactly.
It did just get louder.
Yeah. That's okay. It'll add atmosphere. Like, it's more kinetic.
Okay. We hope so. Anyway, stuff on the table is probably blocking a lot of it anyway. So, we'll just speak loud and clearly.
Let's enunciate our words.
Yes, let's. And this is going to be a bit of a potpourri of an episode. We've got a couple of different things we wanted to talk about and review. The first one is the Bulldog Pub. It is on 600 Grandview Drive South in Oshawa, Ontario. So,
and Evan turned us on to it because he usually goes there for the wing special every Tuesday.
And he kept telling us the wings were good. And I had a couple people at work mention, hey, they have really good wings. So we figured, if we've been told multiple times, we should probably check it out.
Yep, so we went down and checked it out. We've eaten there twice already.
Yes, we wanted to be
thorough. The first time, we got wings, and they were really good.
Mm-hmm.
They were a lot bigger. They were really plump. So it's good that they do it by weight, where you
instead
get a
of size,
pound
yeah.
or 2 pounds. Although the wing special is like 65 cents a wing, I think, on Tuesdays.
Let me see if it's in the menu.
Nope.
We grabbed the takeout menu, but we didn't grab any of the specials.
Yeah, I remember it was 65 cents, and it was on Tuesdays.
On Tuesday nights, yes. And I'd say the size is about the same size as the wings at Kingston Brew Pub.
Yeah. I don't know what pterodactyls they chased down, but
exactly.
They're pretty big.
They found the chickens that are a lot closer related to raptors than we thought they were in the beginning. So.
Exactly.
But the wings are excellent. They have, a bunch of flavors. Not nearly as many as going to Buffalo Wild Wings or Wild Wings.
But more than the Brew Pub.
More than the Brew Pub. They have 15 flavors in total. They are breaded wings. I got which one did I get?
I know, I got the medium.
I had the Caribbean Jerk, that's right. The medium was good. It had a good wingy flavor.
Yeah.
You liked it. It wasn't too hot at all. It was all taste, not much heat.
Yeah.
Which is what a medium should be.
I would love to try the curry pineapple.
Mm-hmm. That may be the next one we get.
Or the honey garlic looks good, too.
Honey garlic is always good. If you can
I
mess
got
up
really
honey
quiet
garlic.
As soon as I screamed honey garlic.
I know. If you can mess up honey garlic, something's wrong. But I got the Caribbean Jerk, and the waitress warned us that it was spicy. I really didn't think it was that bad.
Yeah, you didn't find it too hot to handle.
But it might have been just one of the days that they made it kind of mild, too. I don't know. Now, they do have a suicide wing, and it is supposed to be really hot, so order at your own risk there.
Yeah, exactly.
The prices for the wings are about on par with everybody else. It's $9.99 for a pound, $17.99 for 2 pounds, and $22.99 for 3 pounds. So if you're hungry or you're going with two people and you want to split wings, it's really in your best interest to get the larger quantities.
Yeah.
You save almost $7 for the 3 pounds versus getting a bunch of little orders of 1 pound.
For real. If you can agree on, mm-hmm. you know, one flavor, maybe split it between a couple different flavors, then you're good to go.
And when we got wings, we also ordered a basket of fries. And their fries are really good. We got, all it is wedge-cut fries, kind of like what we used to get at Buffalo Wild Wings in Morgantown.
Oh, yeah.
But they don't have the spice on them, but they're fresh-cut.
They reminded me a lot of the buffalo chips, you're right.
Yeah.
Because they were a thicker fry, because they were wedges, but...
And it was $3.50 for a nice, hearty basket of them. It was totally worth the price. It went really well with the wings. In fact, there were probably almost too many fries. But, you know, we're gluttons, so we ate them all anyway. But the fries really caught me off guard. I was expecting the wings to be good after what everybody had told us. I wasn't expecting the fries. Because usually you go someplace like a pub like that, the fries are just kind of there.
An afterthought.
It's something to cram in your face so you feel full at the end. Kind of like having rice after an Asian meal.
Right.
But these were really tasty, and I was eating them as I ate my wings instead of just munching on them afterwards. So then we went back today, because they have a whole section on their menu of, like, pub stuff, pub grub, pretty much.
I needed some comfort food. It had been a rough weekend.
They call it classic pub favorites on the menu, and it's pretty much what you would expect going to a Canadian or English-style pub. If you've been to a Firkin pub, if you're from the States, you will recognize some of these. For those of you in the States who haven't been to something like that, go to one. Find one.
Yeah.
They're really good. And the place inside looked like a nice classic pub. It was nice inside, well lit for a pub.
Yeah.
Nice decoration and crap on the walls.
It had like the dark colors and wood paneling and
really good variety of draft beer on
yeah.
tap. It's not just, you know, you have Molson or Labatt and that's it. They do a good job of keeping pretty much everything anybody would want on it. So, of their pub favorites, they have beans, bangers, and mash, liver and onions and bacon, chicken fingers, pub classic fish and chips, beef stuffed Yorkie, a traditional roast beef dinner, and the original burger. Sheila got the beans, bangers, and mash. For those of our friends who are from the barbarian tribes of the South, bangers are
sausages.
Mash is mashed potato, and beans are still beans. It's not slang for anything weird. It doesn't come out with, like, a bunch of cockroaches on your plate or something. So what'd you think of your beans, bangers, and mash?
I really liked it. The mashed potatoes were nice amount of garlic mashed potatoes.
And they were real potatoes, too. Yeah. They were nice and lumpy. They weren't out of the box.
Right. And they weren't whipped so fine that I felt like I was in a senior citizen's home.
You know, like how I make my potatoes, which drives her nuts.
They had some texture. So they were also covered with some really nice, dark, rich brown gravy. Mm-hmm. The bangers were really good. They were a little bit on the salty side, but they were super tasty. Mm-hmm. They were nice and grilled, and they had a lot of flavor. I think they were extra salty so that you'd drink more beer.
Well, I'd also like to interject, too, that salt-wise, Sheila and I are pretty sensitive to salt anymore because we just don't cook with it much at home. So if you cook with salt at home, you won't even notice it. But you're right. It makes you thirsty, too. It may just be the seasoning that's in it. I thought they were awesome.
They were really good. And the way that they were grilled, they were nice and smoky.
Yeah.
And then the beans, really great, like Boston Brown beans.
Yeah, again, for
baked beans.
Our friends in the South who've never had beans, bangers, and mash, it's just like kind of like Campbell's pork and beans.
Yeah.
Like what you would take to a picnic, like baked beans, like that.
Yeah. The only thing that was missing was a little bit of toast for the beans, but I didn't know if that would be too much carb with the healthy dose of mashed potatoes.
That was a huge plate of food. I think a piece of toast would almost be too much carb for it, to be honest. It was a killer serving. Mm-hmm. I took a taste of everything she had. I liked all of it, and I'm not a huge fan of beans, bangers, and mash. It's usually something you get and I avoid, but I would actually order it from there. And that's really saying something, because I don't order that.
Yeah, definitely.
Oh, their sausage was so good. In fact, I wanted to check the menu. If they had a sausage sandwich, I don't even see one. Darn it! How could they do this to me? I want this tasty sausage. I have to order the beans, bangers, and mash. Oh, well. I may have to suck it up and do it, because that was really good. Now, the gravy, I had the same gravy on what I ordered. I just want to say, it's not... Usually when you get gravy, it's kind of salty, and it has a really bright flavor to it.
Mm.
And this was a complete turnaround, but it worked really well with everything we had. It's a little bit darker of a flavor. It doesn't have that salty, bright beef flavor to it. I don't know how else to describe it. It was almost a caramelized flavor.
It was like a... I can't remember the French name for it, but it's like the dark brown sauce.
Yeah.
Like a bolognese. It's not a bolognese.
I don't know. That's stuff French. The brain just snapped. I really don't know what it would be in French.
But you know which one I'm
I know which
about.
Sauce you're talking about. Not the...
Not the white one.
Yeah, not the Blanc or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Is it the Blanc sauce?
Yeah.
So, it's a... I'm not going to say it's a different gravy, but I'm used to the salty, bright-tasting beef gravy you get, like, on a hot roast beef sandwich when you order it. And this had a different flavor to it, but was good. I got the beef stuffed Yorkie. I did clarify ahead of time with the waitress that it was not a small, annoying dog that had been stuffed on a spit.
Well, it's a Yorkshire pudding. I've never heard anyone call it a Yorkshire pudding a Yorkie either, but I just made the logical leap.
We just wanted to make sure, so don't worry, they don't serve dog at the pub. But, It's the biggest Yorkshire pudding I've ever seen in my life. Let's just start off right there.
How many inches across was that thing?
The whole plate was huge. I can't even tell you. It must have been 8-9 inches across total with everything on it. The Yorkshire pudding itself was like a small pie of a pudding.
Yeah.
It was huge. And what it is they take a Yorkshire pudding, and the bottom of it, they put a bunch of sautéed mushrooms and onions, and they put gravy in there, too. Then they put some beef on that, thin sliced roast beef, and it was good roast beef. They put some more gravy all over that, and then they put some cheese on top, and they stick it all into the broiler and melt the cheese, and then they serve it to you. And it comes out with a plate on a plate because it's, like, nuclear hot when you get it.
So it's like a twist on an open roast beef sandwich.
Yes.
It's like Britishified.
It is. It's like a Britishified, pubified hot roast beef sandwich. Now, you get your choice of soup, salad, or fries with it. I just randomly decided I wanted salad today, so I got a salad ahead of time instead of the fries. I'm really glad I did, because it is a huge serving, and I think the fries, as delicious as they are there, would almost be too much carb to go with it.
Mm.
And I think I made the right choice. So the ZFC recommendation, if you get the beef stuffed Yorkie, go with the salad, because you're going to need the roughage.
Yeah.
This thing is a monster of a meal.
That should be on a bumper sticker. Go with the salad. You're going to need the roughage.
Yes, it should. We'll have to do bumper stickers someday. It's huge. I mean, first off, we took a picture of it, and the picture doesn't do it justice, because the picture makes it look almost regurgitated. Because It's got the cheese melted on top with all the stuff going on. And it doesn't look good. Yeah, the lighting in the pub wasn't... It's pub lighting. So it just doesn't look really good in the picture. But trust me, when they put it in front of me, it looked amazing.
Right.
It just smelled great. It looked, at first on top, a little bit dry because they stuck it under the boiler. And the beef, when the cheese melted, the beef looked dry. But it wasn't dry. Because as soon as you cut it, it all mixed with the gravy. And it was all nice and juicy and soft. So don't let the looks deceive you there. It was perfect. It was just such an awesome artery-clogging meal. I can only eat one of those a year, probably.
It's a glow. It's like the lumberjack breakfast. You should probably only eat it once every 6 months.
Exactly. But I don't know. The onions were just, like, sautéed just right. You know how you hit that sweet spot with the onion, where literally it's a sweet spot?
Yeah.
You caramelize it just enough where you still have a little bit of the onion taste to it, but all the sugars come out. And if you go just a step beyond that, it's
black,
burnt and beyond any kind of
hope.
These were just at that sweet spot. So you had the sweet going on with the dark with the gravy. You had the cheese. You had the beef. It was awesome. And the mushrooms are really good with it, too. I mean, they were sliced just right. They weren't giant, honking huge chunks of mushroom. 100% recommend it. Really delicious. I can't think of any way to make it better except, I don't know, make it smaller. Because it's huge.
I was surprised you didn't try the steak and mushroom pie.
Every time I see steak and mushroom pie, I think, that's the other pub favorite that's not on the takeout menu right now. But I think of steak and kidney pie.
But not everybody likes kidneys, which is why it's a steak and mushroom pie.
But I just wasn't in the mood for steak and mushroom pie. I almost got the shepherd's pie. And that's another one that's not on the takeout menu that's also on their pub favorites menu. They do have a shepherd's pie, which looked good.
Yeah.
But I also try to stick to the whole, I should order out things that I can't do at home really well. Mm. And we make a killer shepherd's pie at home. So I didn't want to judge it against ours, because I make it to my taste. So it's hard to live up to that, because I know exactly what I want when I make it.
Exactly.
Or when you make it, or what have you. Overall, 100 thumbs up.
100 thumbs up? Is that even possible?
For the Bulldog Pub. It has a cool name, Bulldog
yes.
Pub. The wait staff is awesome.
The wait staff is super friendly.
Yeah, we had Megan today. Not the tall Amazonian Megan, but we had the above-average height Megan. She said, there's two of us, one's really tall, and I hate to call her tall, because that makes me sound like I'm short. But I'm not short, and she's not short. She's very, very nice. The other waitress we had last time was really nice as well. They're very friendly. They're willing to chat, but they're not intrusive. They're not up your butt bothering you or anything. The prices are very reasonable on the menu.
Yeah.
You can get anything from a sandwich. Where were the sandwiches? The sandwiches are right around $8 to $10. They have a huge section of appetizers for a pub. You can find just something to nibble on there.
They have soup and salad, too.
They have soup, they have salad, they have
appetizers.
Daily specials. Today they had like a tuna wrap that was $7-something and an open-faced beef hot beef sandwich for $8.95.
They do have live music and stuff, too.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't gone there during the night.
They have specials every night. Today is mussels night, don't forget.
Yes.
So you can go and get fresh mussels for a song.
Mussels marinara.
We're going to go hit up the website and see if we can dig up the specials again or just go check.
Yeah, the website is bulldogpub.ca or thebulldogpuboshawa.ca.
And we're going to see if they're on Facebook too, and if they are, we'll make sure we add them and put the appropriate information up on our site for it as well. Overall, and I love the parking at the place too, because it's in this little strip mall area where there's a food land and a fabric land and a couple other little stores, so there's plenty of parking. You don't have to try to jockey around downtown or anything, which kind of makes me happy sometimes, because sometimes you just don't feel like dealing with that.
And sometimes when you get pubs, they're situated in old buildings. They have really kind of almost dangerous parking lots.
Like Jack's. I love Jack's filling station. I love their wings. I think the Bulldog wings are just as good. And the parking here is not nearly as
horrible.
Horrifying, yes.
Yeah.
It's pretty bad. But, again, multiple thumbs up. Go check it out if you're in the Oshawa area. If you're looking for a lunch spot, they're open for lunch. Go check them out. If you're looking for a regular pub area to go to,
The only thing that could make them better would be NTN.
Oh, if you guys ever hear this at the Bulldog Pub and you're looking for some new gimmick to bring people in, you should do NTN because we love trivia. And if nothing else, you'll get two regular customers because of it.
Yeah.
Because
we'll go once a week.
Trivia. We would go once a week. Sometimes twice. So, on to other things. There's another mini review we'd like to do that we haven't really talked about.
It's Golden Sail on Dean Avenue. It's at the corner of Ritson and Dean, across the street from the McDonald's.
Mm-hmm.
And it originally started off as a fish and chips place. Now it's kind of like half Chinese, half fish and chips, or still fish and chips?
It's all fish and chips, so they just added spring rolls to the menu.
Mm.
Which makes sense, because they have the fryers there to do everything.
Well, yeah.
Why not throw on something like that? And we stopped on a random whim. There's that little sweet spot area around Dean and Ritson where we're finding all these good little places to eat.
Because that's where Cyrus is.
That's where Cyrus
is. That's where the Sushi King is that we still haven't
gone to
yet.
Still have to try. I have a feeling they may be just as good. And then now there's this place. And we've been looking for a good fish and chips place since we left Aurelia. We've been spoiled by Bounty and Tor up there. And they had phenomenal fish and chips up there. We've had a couple places down here that were good, but not quite as good, and they didn't have the variety.
Yeah.
You couldn't go in and get multiple types of fish, or you couldn't go in and get fried clams or fried scallops or whatever. Well, we finally found it. It was right under our nose, right in the neighborhood by where Sheila's mom lives. I mean,
yeah.
We're idiots for not stopping sooner. We've been there twice now.
The first time I ordered it, I actually called them up, and I said, yeah, I ordered the fried clams, and you could tell they were a little bit hesitant. She's like, yes. And I said, they were the best fried clams that I've ever had. She's like, oh, thank you.
They're good.
They're really good.
They know how long to fry them. They don't get tough, which is easy to overcook fried clams. Mm. I know that's something that you deal with because you love fried clams. You're addicted to them. I've had the haddock and the whitefish. Both have been really good. The fries there are really, really good. They're fresh cut fries. They're not, you know, nasty bagged.
And
or if they are
sure
nasty bagged fries, they're doing a good job of sprucing them up somehow so they taste really good.
I think they fry in peanut oil.
I think they do too.
Which is probably why it tastes so awesome. Because peanut oil can get to that great temperature to make sure that the outside is nice and crispy and the inside is nice and fluffy.
Yeah.
Without things being greasy.
And the
which
fries,
is what you really want.
And they give that particular flavor to a fry. If you've had fries fried in peanut oil, you know it. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty sure you're right, or they're using something really high temperature. Could be even sunflower oil. Doesn't that go really
Might
high
be,
too?
Yeah.
Yeah. But they're using something that gets really up there for the fries, and they're
and
great.
And again, in case people are allergic to peanuts out there, peanut oil does not have the oil in it that will make you balloon up and die.
Yeah, peanut oil is very safe. You will not
You
have
can
problems.
Eat things that are fried in peanut oil, just make sure that there's no other peanuts included.
And their prices are really good at the Golden Anchor.
Golden Sail.
Golden Sail.
At the other end of the boat.
The sail. At the top end, because they're at the top. The fried clams, or the dinner, which includes the fries, was already around $6.50. The whitefish meal is right around $5.99. I want to say the haddock is $8.99, the cod's $7.99. And then they do just the single pieces, if you just want to get a single piece of fish. They do fried shrimp, they do fried scallops. They have a great variety on their menu, and they just added to the menu spring rolls. That are really good.
Yeah.
I ordered two of them yesterday, threw them on just in case we were hungry, and they're very crisp, very light, just vegetable stuffed spring rolls. I thought they weren't huge and hard to eat either.
No, they're probably about as big around as your thumb.
A little bit bigger than that, maybe.
What, 2 or 3 inches?
I'd say they're about as wide as 2 of your fingers put together, unless you're like some huge monster of a dude, then maybe 1 of your fingers, but for me, it's like little hands, 2 fingers together. So they're about 1 inch across. They're not giant egg rolls, but they were good.
Yeah,
I'd throw them on an
They're
order
nice.
Again.
They were filled with cabbage and carrot.
There's something else in there too.
Veggies,
sprouts, and things. So, and again, it sounds odd, but it goes really well with the fish and chips. You need the roughage, all the grease. Throw some roughage in there just in case.
Well, and they do eat in, they do take out. Do they do delivery as well?
I don't believe they do. I think it's just eat in and take out right now.
We'll find out that and post it.
And it's a cute little restaurant when you walk in. It's a nice little setup. They're very fast. From walking in and ordering my food, I think I'm walking out 10 minutes later. And I love the irony of it's right across the street from McDonald's. And quite honestly, if you get one of their specials or you get the whitefish or even the clams, it's about the same price as going to McDonald's anymore up here. Because McDonald's is so expensive.
Yeah, we got two meals and it was like $15.
It was right around $15.
That's the price of two of the, you know, large sandwich meals.
Yeah, the only difference is you don't get the sodas like you do at McDonald's, but that's okay because you're getting really good food that's actually probably better for you in the long run.
Yeah.
So, delicious, 100% love them. And now the third part of the episode.
Da-da-da-da!
It's like, it's Vi Fat Chicks in three parts today. We picked up another copy of Weishinbo.
This one is the Ramen and Gyoza.
Yes, this is number 2 in the series of the a la carte English translations, which is the only English translations of Weishinbo, unfortunately. Hopefully someday they'll do the whole series. Even if it's just digital, I'd love to read the whole thing.
Yeah.
And it's all about ramen and gyoza. What do you want to say about it? Because I loved it.
We should just, I guess, take it chapter by chapter.
I don't even know. Let's just break it into two parts, the ramen and the gyoza.
Okay.
What did you take away from the ramen section?
From the ramen section, it's the really interesting thing for me was even though this was written probably
say the 80s, because this is early in the series, some of
it. If we split the difference and say this was written in the 90s, it just surprises me how much Canadians and Japanese have in common with their country's economical outlook, because they were talking about local eating before local eating was hot here. Mm-hmm. If you split the difference and look at the timeline there, because mm-hmm. there's this one ramen dish where he talks about doing it, and
it's a cold one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let me find out the name for you. It's a Chinese dish, but it's really not Chinese. It's kind of like
it's
how,
a cold noodle dish.
It's kind of how curry's not really Indian kind of thing.
Right.
And it's called Hayashi Chuka.
Yeah.
Hayashi Chuka is the name of the dish.
And it's Hiyashi.
Hiyashi. It's cold soup, cold noodles with cold meat of some kind on top of it.
Right.
Sometimes so, crab or pork or something.
Yeah.
I'd never heard of it before this, actually.
No, neither had I. So apparently, the gist of this particular comic was that the Hiyashi
Chuka
usually is of low quality ingredients, low quality soy sauce, whenever you get it out. So what he did to make it better was to use all local ingredients, use really good brewed soy sauce, use really good vinegar, decent sake, get the noodles made
with the right flours and everything.
Local flour.
And egg.
And real, like, nice organic eggs. Mm-hmm. Or I guess it would actually just be free-range eggs in here, because they mentioned the chickens were grass-fed. Yeah. You know, they were allowed to scratch and peck.
The stock was made from an old chicken instead of a young chicken, which
is something... Yeah, he went to, like, his aunt's house or his grandmother's house and got, like, a two-year-old hen to make the stock with. So to me, that was really interesting. And then the flip side of it is the guy that he's competing against uses this equivalent ingredients, but picks Chinese ingredients that are imported.
Which actually had more of a Chinese flavor, but they were both really good dishes. But yeah, and then there was the other one in there that was in the ramen section about the two towns that were having the battle.
Yeah, they were
for
competing
the local
against
dish.
Each other for tourists to find a local dish to bring people in.
And they were pretty much, it was all centered around using local ingredients. And if there was an overreaching theme for the entire book, it was local food, which I was really impressed with,
too. Yeah, it was, like, really ahead of its time.
Definitely.
Like, who could have predicted that
back
then?
In the 80s and 90s. Because
it
started
in the
mid-80s.
Well, in the 80s and the early 90s, people were still under the, if it came from farther away, it's better.
Yes.
Things that are imported are better. Mm-hmm. You know, imported beer, imported different ingredients, you know, truffles flown in from France or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Exotic fruits from the Caribbean, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. That's obviously going to be better because it was more expensive, too.
Exactly.
So it's really flew in the face of a lot of tradition at the time. Very neat. I love the ramen section. If I took anything away from it, it was just, I liked the chapter about the two brothers fighting their two restaurants.
Oh, right.
About the actual cooking of the ramen, because it makes a difference at what temperature you cook the ramen at and everything.
Well, the one
whether
guy
it let the dough rest.
The one guy made really good noodles, but made really crappy soup.
Yeah, and he
and
didn't
the
cook
other guy
the noodles right.
Could cook things really well, but he made really crappy noodles.
Yes.
So together they were stronger as one?
Yes. But I really took away from the whole, you know, sometimes just boiling the heck out of it isn't the solution. And
yeah.
Sometimes letting your dough rest pays off, which is something as a cook I am horrible about. I go to extremes. So that was kind of neat to see. And I loved the just seeing the noodle technique whenever he'd show it. Because they do get the art style in here gets really detailed when it comes to actually making the food.
When it comes down to the technique
and
how the food's put together.
And they showed the one Chinese guy doing Chinese noodles, this one technique with a bamboo pole. And he rolls it out flat, and then he folds the dough again, and he rolls it out flat again with this huge bamboo pole that goes across the table that he, like, uses his leg to roll it really, like, tight. And he keeps rolling it and rolling it until he has this, like, stack of folded dough. And he cuts it, and after he cuts it, he grabs the pieces he cut, and it all just unfolds into noodles because he's been flouring it as he rolls it. And that's so neat to see that versus the Japanese method of pulling ramen, where you're pulling it and stretching it and folding it and pulling it and pulling it over and over. So that was kind of neat to see detailed illustrations of both of those techniques.
Mm-hmm.
That blew me away. So the whole thing is just interesting to read to begin with. I learned so much every
time
we pick up
one of these. It's such an interesting
series.
Yeah. It really is.
And then the second section of the book, part two, is all about gyoza, which are dumplings.
Mm-hmm.
And Sheila was reading this, and she thought the same thing I did. They kept going on about how you have bad breath after you eat gyoza, and you're so full of, you smell like garlic. And she's confused. I'm confused. I'm like, I've never had garlic in my gyoza. I don't understand.
Yeah, Mike couldn't understand why they were like, oh, you should need it for lunch if you come back to the office and stink up the place.
Yeah.
I'm like, because I don't stink after I eat Tracy's dumplings.
Yeah. And it turns out, we find out later in the book, that that's Japanese gyoza. In Chinese gyoza, they talk specifically about how Chinese gyoza don't use garlic in the filling, which makes perfect sense why I've never had it, because I've only ever had the Chinese ones to the best of my knowledge.
Right.
So I'm like, oh, yeah.
Well, you've only ever had the boiled and steamed ones, too.
Yes, I've never... Well, I've had the fried
ones. You've had the fried ones, but...
I've never had them, like... I've had the boiled ones all the time.
Right, because the restaurants in Japan that they go to, they do all fried dumplings because they're faster. Mm-hmm. If you don't get the crimp right and it happens to horrible blowout, mm-hmm. it doesn't ruin.
Yeah.
You can still serve it.
Yeah, you don't have to squeeze all the air out carefully from the filling, because if you make the boiled ones and you don't squeeze the air out before you pinch it, you have an air pocket that's going to expand as it heats up, because air expands when it gets hot, and that could cause a dumpling blowout as you're boiling them too. And you have to boil them carefully so you cook the filling, but don't overcook the outside. And
yeah.
It is a technique that even I sometimes mess up still, and I've been doing them for a while now. Gosh, almost 10 years.
Yeah.
Since I've been to China. So I feel fairly experienced in it, and I understood that section. I'm like, this is so cool, because I'm doing it right, kind of.
You're like,
you know?
I understand this.
Yeah, but it was fascinating to read that. I loved the restaurant that they were talking about. All these are fictitious restaurants, but I love the one that was like the Wild Wings of Gyoza places.
Yeah,
they had
100
flavors.
Different dumplings, and they had the one that was just all garlic. Mm-hmm. The all garlic gyoza for really horrible breath.
Yeah, it was really, really cool overall. Again, recommend it, the whole series, to anybody. This is the second one we've read. We're going to do the rest of them eventually and talk about them. So if there's one particular thing you have no interest in reading, you'll know not to read it. Or if you need more teasers to tantalize you into getting it, we'll definitely do that for you, too.
Did you want to talk about the other thing, too? About the end of war stuff?
Yeah, actually, go ahead.
Okay, I didn't know if you wanted to talk about
that was a really interesting section. It was a short, kind of almost an afterthought, but it was really interesting to see.
Yeah, it's probably, is it the last
It's the
chapter?
Last... Last course of the book. They call them courses for the sections.
In case you're not familiar with it, the best analogy I have for history in the East, completely simplified, mm-hmm. is if you look at China as ancient Greece and Japan as ancient Rome, mm-hmm. because the Japanese borrowed very heavily in their early period from classical Chinese. That would be a part of any noble's upbringing, mm-hmm. to learn Chinese, to learn the Chinese classics. Mm-hmm. They're very heavily influenced by classical Chinese. And then in modern times, they've had conflicts.
To finish the analogy, it's just like how the Romans borrowed heavily from the ancient Greeks, and for a period of time in Roman history, everything Greek was gee whiz, wow, cool, awesome.
Yeah.
The same thing. You had to be very well-versed in Greek classics and Greek law to be taken seriously in Rome for a while, too. Not all the time.
Yeah,
again,
it wasn't this is a very,
very much a simplification,
generalization.
But I was floored when Sheila came up with that. I'm like, oh my God, you're right. That's the perfect way to explain it. Mm-hmm. Somebody who has a grounding in Western history, but not so much in Eastern history.
Right. And then as the Roman Empire progressed, mm-hmm. they started to look down on Greece as being lesser than them. And to a certain extent, that's true with my analogy as well.
I think it happened more extreme in the East than the West, though. Mm-hmm. There was a lack of respect for Greece after a period of time, but there was still also a heavy respect amongst academic circles in Rome. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't the widespread worship of it that it was earlier.
Yeah.
Whereas you actually see some real hatred develop between China and Japan throughout history. So
in the East, they've had some really horrible conflicts.
Yeah.
And even up until this century, well, I guess this last century, because we're in 2000 now, not 1900, but they've had some really horrible conflicts, particularly during World War II, mm-hmm. when Japan invaded China, and
horrible atrocities were committed by
all. I can spare you the gory details. Just think about the worst things that could happen to you, and imagine people that hate you so much, they come into your country specifically to do those things to you.
And the Chinese did some pretty horrible things to the Japanese when they could, too. It's been just a nonstop back and forth of evil badness.
Right.
And there's still even echoes of that today in China. There were a lot of Chinese people I met who expressed to me that they really hate the Japanese. Mm. So.
And I understand that. And hearing things like that in the West, you always hear about how racism in the East is a lot more widespread, mm-hmm. and very tolerated. Whereas racism here, we're doing our best
to
stamp it out.
We've gotten very PC.
Yeah.
They have not. So it's a different world. But to bring this back to the book, there's a whole section dealing with a fellow in the book goes to take some Chinese people to a restaurant that he doesn't realize has what is considered a racist term in the name.
Mm-hmm.
And it explains about the issues between China and Japan and how the Chinese wanted to be called one name for the country and the Japanese continued to use another name for them that they consider derogatory.
Mm-hmm.
So it's eye-opening if you don't have any background in Eastern history, even Eastern modern history, and it's something neat to read to see how the racial dynamics go on in the East.
Exactly. The way that they explained it, the word, by the way, is Shina. Means China, doesn't it?
Yeah. Shina, so the name of the restaurant was the Shina Soba Rereikin. Oh, gosh, my Japanese is non-existent. It's so bad. But the Shina
Rereikin.
Soba. Shina yeah. Soba meant the Chinese noodles.
Right.
And it was a horribly offensive term. He went to take the Chinese people in, and they just flipped out and screamed.
They're like, how could you take us to a place like this, you know?
Well, it'd be like taking somebody to something that's like the N-word chicken house.
Yeah.
You know, you wouldn't do that.
No, not at all.
Or to take it back into turn-of-the-century phrasing, taking one of my ancestors someplace where it was like the hunky pierogi.
Yeah.
You wouldn't take them someplace like that. They would be horribly offended by it. So...
I have to stop myself from coming up with more terms.
Yes, let's not get offensive. Let's keep our clean rating for this episode, please. We've done very well so far. But it's an interesting book, or rather, that last chapter.
It shows how the healing has actually started.
Yeah, and it's 15 or 20 pages, and they express it so simply that I haven't even seen college professors be able to give it out in such plain terms. And I think this ties into even Mouse.
Yeah.
You know, the graphic novel Mouse about the Holocaust.
By Art Spiegelman?
Yes, I never cease to be amazed at how graphic novels are such a great medium for transmitting or explaining complex concepts and situations.
Mm-hmm.
And it still pains me to see how ignored as a medium it is by academic circles, because you can do a heck of a lot with a graphic novel in an instructional setting.
Yeah.
And I think that's another reason why the Oshinbo series really strikes a chord with me, because every one I've read, all two of them, I make it sound like I've read a bunch of them, all two of them that I've read, I have taken away so much information about Japanese cooking and cuisine that I would really struggle to do with a book without pictures.
Yeah.
And it just so happened when they wrote this, the fellow who wrote it and the illustrator were on the same page, they were able to really mesh together, and they were able to present this in ways that were simplified, but complex.
Well, we recognize that one vinegar that we use for the dumplings.
Yeah, it's the same vinegar we get.
It was a different Romaji spelling,
yeah.
But it was the Chengkang vinegar.
Because that's the province or the area, the region that's known for it. And
yeah, it's
that
like
happens
a dark...
to be the same vinegar we get all
yeah,
the time.
For the dumplings. So, just a great series. If you can find it, definitely pick it up. You will not be mm-hmm. disappointed.
There's only 7 or 8 of them. There are not many of them at all. It's a great price, a great value for the price point, because it's not one of the little short, wimpy mangas that takes you a couple, out like an hour to read or half an hour to read. It's one that it's full of information. It's dense. It's going to take you, if you're a slow reader, a couple of days maybe to read it. I blew through it in a couple hours, but then again, I'm also inhuman. It took you less than a shift to read it at work.
Yeah. I read it in a couple hours.
Yeah. But again, you're also voraciously interested, or a voracious reader when it comes to these kinds of topics, too. So it's definitely worth the price. It's like $15 in Canada, 12-something in the States.
Yeah.
But it's totally worth it. And it's something you'll go back to and probably reread or re-reference. So.
Yeah. And if your Chapters or Barnes & Noble doesn't have it, mm-hmm. you can go to the kiosk and order it.
Oh, yeah. I don't know if they do that at Barnes & Noble, but at Chapters,
they probably
it was
do.
So cool. We went to the little kiosk, pulled it up, said we wanted to order it. They asked if we wanted to pay by credit card or cash. We said, let's use cash, and we pushed the cash button, and it spit out a little receipt that we could go up front and pay for it, and because we had it sent to the store and we ordered it at the store, we didn't have to pay shipping for it.
Right.
Which was really cool.
Sent an email out as soon as it really reached the store, and we went
Actually,
and picked it up.
I got a phone call, and all yeah. I needed to pick it up was a photo ID, so if you're in Canada, you're frustrated because your Chapters isn't very big or doesn't carry much, use and abuse the kiosks, because it doesn't cost you anything else
yeah.
to do it. And they'll let you know when it comes in. They'll hold it for you. You just have to get your butt over
there. Because
if
you're going to order that online and not have it shipped to a store,
$5 shipping almost.
That's like half the cost of yeah. the book, or mm-hmm. a third the cost of the book.
So I think we've gone on and on about a whole wide variety of topics. I think it did us some good to get out and record these else.
I think so, too.
Yes, we needed. And I think our listeners needed that. They needed to hear less snuffling and more coffee grinding in the background.
They might have missed that espresso machine.
Yes, this is Tracy.
And this is Sheila, and we are Spy Fat Chicks. Thanks for listening.
We hope you enjoyed the Spy Fat Chicks podcast. Please add us as a friend on MySpace and or Facebook. You can also follow us on Twitter. Please email your comments, questions, or suggestions to zweifatchicks@gmail.com. That's zweifatchicks@gmail.com. Our theme music is Hot Swing by Kevin MacLeod. Our podcasts, like Mr. MacLeod's music, are protected under a Creative Commons attribute copyright. You can make copies of our shows and share them with friends, but please make sure that credit is given. Once again, thank you for tuning in, and we hope you have a great day.